controlling the human mind, and the mark of the beast, number four. Let's come to Psalm 8. Psalm 8. Now, this is quite a psalm because it tells us about the potential that God has given us. Psalm 8. Let's begin right here in verse 1. Our Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens. Out of the mouths of babes and sucklings, you have ordained strength because of your adversaries to silence the enemy and the avenger. Now, where are the babes? See? No one knows except us. The world doesn't know that we are a threat to them, inasmuch as we're going to rule the world. And it's through us that God is going to avenge all the enemies. Then he says, verse 3, when I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him? Now here's the key, verse 5. For you have made him a little lower than God. In Hebrew there is Elohim, which is God. Now the King James translates it angels, and from the Septuagint it is angels. That's why in Hebrews 2nd chapter it says angels. But the Hebrew is Elohim, which is God. Now how did God make us? Let us make man in our image after our likeness. Okay? And then the rest of the story through the Bible is to be after his kind. So it starts, that's why Jesus said, I'm the first and the last, the beginning and the ending. See, so that's the beginning, and the ending is taking place at the resurrection. So a little lower than God. That means we have great mental abilities, great analytical abilities, and let's come back here to Genesis 11. And let's finish another part of the story that Mike started this morning. Genesis 11, and let's see what God says concerning man. Now, while we're going back to Genesis 11, let's just think a little bit about the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve. How did God appear to Adam and Eve? He walked with them, he talked with them, instructed them, created them. Did he appear in his glorified form? No. He probably appeared as a human being, just like he appeared to the disciples as flesh and bone after his resurrection, though he was still a spirit being. See? Now, it's key to remember there in Luke 24, he didn't say flesh and blood. He said flesh and bone. So here's Adam and Eve, created with great capacity, little lower than God. They already have a language. They can think. They can talk. They can reason. They can analyze. And they can see God face to face. And they look at God, and they look at themselves, and say, we're almost like God. Now, can't you see that happening? So along comes a serpent, and he says, aha. If you eat of this tree, you will become like God, and you decide what is good and evil. You don't have to listen to God anymore because you'll be like him. You decide. Well, they didn't become anything like God other than the fact that they were created in the image and likeness of God. So maybe this helps us to understand why they succumbed to the temptation. Because God put in every human being the desire to improve, the desire to do better, the desire to get ahead, you see. But he wants people to do it his way, with his laws, with as we know, with God's Spirit. However, that sin did not change their intellect. It didn't change their ability to reason, to think, to do what we would call the scientific method, etc., etc. Now, we know that God brought the flood because man was wicked and corrupt. But Jesus also said, just as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man, right? So what do we have? We have scientific development taking off like a rocket. But we have sin and wretchedness also multiplying, don't we? Lawlessness. So human beings, though they can think of all of these good things, do not have the inherent way within them to do what is right. However, they can do fantastic things. So let's come here to Genesis 11, and let's see what God said. After they said, let us build a tower to reach into the heavens, verse 4. Verse 5, and the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men had built. And the Lord said, verse 6, behold, the people are one, and they all have one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. Now nothing which they have imagined to do will be constrained from them. And the Word of God means exactly that. And we will see how far that human beings can go. Whatever they imagine to do, nothing will be constrained from them. All right? So men have great abilities. Look at all that we've created and designed, and the machines and the mechanisms and so forth. You know, I was thinking the other day, children today, let's go back. How many here lived at a time when there were no cars, no phones, okay, no electricity, no running water, no flush toilets? Now, children coming into this world, what do they have in addition to it? Okay, television, computer, internet, cell phone, iPod, iPhone, iPad, text messaging, even creating new ways to communicate by recreating words by using consonants so that they can say a whole sentence in just a few letters. And of course, all of that is powered by very low levels of electricity, isn't it? Now, how many have seen the ad where a person comes before this big video screen? And you can see it on the news. They go before the screen and they just go like this, just like an iPhone, you know. You go through many different things till you come to what you want. All of that is natural to them, right? They grew up in it. See, now we have a couple of young boys over here. Now, when I was a little older than them, I was milking two cows every morning, feeding the chickens, feeding the horse, gathering the eggs in the afternoon, milking the cows in the afternoon, separating the milk. In the summer, I'd drive a team of horses to cut the hay, rake it in windrows, shock it, and get it into the barn. And I started that when I was 8 years old. See? Well, today, you ask a child, well, where does milk come from? Well, a bottle or a carton. See? Because we have changed the way everything is done, not necessarily for the good. Now we have a lot of technology that is coming down the pike. Let's come back here to the book of Revelation again. And let's look at something concerning the mark of the beast. Let's come this time to Revelation 14. Revelation 14. Now, this talks about the mark of the beast. We'll talk a little bit about this here, maybe put it in some context. Okay. Revelation 14, and let's look at it and see what it says here. Revelation 14. All right. Now, let's pick it up here Verse 6. This is the beginning of the three angels' messages. When do these messages come? Now, when you read Revelation 14, you think that it follows in chronology of Revelation 13, but it doesn't do that. Okay? Let me just mention Revelation 14 and 144,000 here. This is not the same as the 144,000 in Revelation 7. Because Revelation 7 are from the children of Israel, these are 144,000 from the earth. Now, I'll explain that at a later time. I won't get into it here, just to let you know it's different. All right, beginning with verse 6. Here's the first angel. And I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to proclaim to those who dwell on the earth, and to every nation and tribe and language and people, saying with a loud voice, fear God, give glory to him, because the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. Now, we're not told when this occurs, but we'll pick up a clue of it here with the third angel. Verse 8. And then another angel followed, saying, the great city Babylon is fallen because of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, which she has given all nations to drink. Now notice the third angel. Verse 9. And a third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast and has his image and receives the mark in his forehead or in his hand, he shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is mixed undiluted in the cup of his wrath, and he shall be tormented in fire and brimstone in the sight of the holy angels and of the Lamb. Now, don't you think... Let me ring the bell here, okay? Would you not expect the warning to come before the mark of the beast is implemented? Why give a warning after it's already implemented? It would have to be before. So this puts it sometime just before the enforcement of the mark of the beast. Now, is this when the church is no longer able to give a message because of the persecution that has come against the church, and so God sends an angel to warn the whole world? Because the mark of the beast is coming on the whole world, right? Well, I would be inclined to believe this would have to be before the enforcement of the mark of the beast. Now, we're not talking about voluntarily accepting it, but we're talking about enforcement. Now, even those who voluntarily accept it are going to find themselves in the same trouble as well. Now, let's read the next couple of verses here. And the smoke of their torment ascends into the ages of eternity. I understand this verse now only after seeing a very unusual sight, which was photographed from a satellite. Which is this. The ionosphere is like an envelope around the earth. And they had a photographic motion picture of what happens to the ionosphere. Occasionally, it opens up and radiation goes out. Now, smoke goes up, doesn't it? And it's caught in the ionosphere, and so when the ionosphere opens up, guess where that smoke goes? All the particles go in space and stay in space and go and go and go and go and go. So this is literally true. It's the smoke of their torment goes into the ages of eternity. Not that they are tormented into the ages of eternity. Okay? Now, And the smoke of their torment ascends into the ages of eternity, and those who worship the beast and his image, and all who receive the mark of his name, shall have no rest day or night. That is, until what time? Until they die. They will die. Now come back here to Revelation 16. We'll come back here in just a minute. Let's turn the page over. Revelation 16. Revelation 16 has to do with what? Pouring out of the seven last plagues. What is the scene that is set? Revelation 15, the sea of glass is there, and all the resurrected saints are on the sea of glass. And we're going to see all the seven last plagues poured out. Down below are the armies of the beast and all of those who have received the mark of the beast. So let's read what it says here. Verse 2. And the first angel went and poured out his vial onto the earth, and an evil, grievous sore fell upon the men who had the mark of the beast and those who were worshiping his image. So their judgment comes. But these are men. Do men in extreme circumstances die? Yes. No human beings are tormented day and night forever. Only Satan, the devil, and his demons. All right, back to Revelation 14. Notice verse 12 now. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are the ones who keep the commandments of God and have the faith of Jesus. Now notice this also gives us a little time setting, doesn't it? This could not be right at the end of the tribulation, but right at the beginning of it, before the mark of the beast is given and enforced. Because notice, verse 13, and I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from this time forward. Yea, says the Spirit, so that they may rest from their labors and their works follow them. All right, come back here to Revelation 6. Let's see when they are going to die. Revelation 6. Here it is right here, the fifth seal. And when he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the testimony that they held. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true, do you not judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? And white robes were given to each one of them, and they were told that they should rest a short time yet until it be fulfilled that both their fellow servants and their brethren also would be killed just as they had been. All right, that's when they die in the Lord. And what are their works? Giving their lives. Okay? Now let's see who does the persecuting. Satan, the devil, does. This also gives us a time frame in which to put this. Now let's pick it up here in verse 13, Revelation 12. And when the dragon saw that he was cast down to the earth, he persecuted the woman who had brought forth the man-child. And two wings of a great eagle were given to the woman so that she might fly into her place, into the wilderness, where she is nourished for a time, times and half a time, from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast water out of his mouth as a river, so that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the river that the dragon had cast out of his mouth. Verse 17 is the key. Then the dragon was furious with the woman and went to make war with the rest of her seed. Now, the King James says remnant, and it really means rest, the remainder. Remnant indicates a smaller number, but from what we understand, the smaller number are the ones that go to a place of safety, and the larger number are the ones who are left behind. Notice what happens here. Went to make went to make war with the rest of her seed who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Now, since we know that they're going to be in a place of safety for how long? A times, time, and half a time. That's 3.5 years, right? Okay. Which means that the war against the saints begins 3.5 years before the end. Would that not be true? All right. Therefore, chapter 14 concerning the mark of the beast and the martyrdom of the saints, blessed are those who die in the Lord, that has to be in the same time frame as Revelation 12. Okay? Now, we can explain other things with the rest of Revelation 14 and 15 a little later. Now, let's come to Revelation 13 and cover the mark of the beast again. So let's pick it up here in verse 16 again. And he causes all, the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the free and the bond, to receive a mark in their right hands or in their foreheads, so that no one may have the ability to buy and sell unless he has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now, as we covered earlier, all the scriptures are going to be fulfilled to their maximum degree, not the minimum, the maximum degree. Now, how are they going to do it? Do they have the means to do it? Is the means to number everyone, to give them a number in their right hand or in their forehead, available today? The answer is yes. That's why I gave you the report that you can read along. And what we send out with the CD, the report will not be included, because we have too many things to send out, and it would constitute too much for us to send out all of these. So I will put in my letter where you can go online and download it. So this is the first part of three technologies. It's called An Introduction to New Technologies, Part 1. Now, this is a transcript of a speech by Patrick Redman, and it gives his credentials. So he starts out, I want to thank you, Yvonne, for inviting me here to talk about new technologies. What I'm going to do is give you an introduction to three technologies that are becoming more and more important. The first is RFID chips. That's radio frequency identification. The second, genetic engineering. What it's doing to the foods. The third, synthetic biology. And that is hair-raising. I'll just tell you a little bit about synthetic biology. Have you heard of nanotechnology? Okay, nanotechnology is working on the atom scale. A nano is 1/20th, I think it is, 1/20th of a millimeter. I think it's even smaller than that. Smaller. We'll get to it when we get to the report, okay? But at that level, they can take and combine with nanotechnology living cells, cells of plants, of animals, of humans, and create new life. Now, remember what we read in Genesis 11, that now nothing that they imagine to do will be restrained from them. Okay? Now, let's read on. Let's come to the first big paragraph that starts with RFIDs. Okay, you got that? RFIDs can be passive, semi-passive, or active. Active RFIDs have an internal power source, such as a battery. This allows the tag to send signals back to the reader, which is a machine. So if I have an RFID on me and it has a battery, I can just send a signal to the reader wherever it is. They can receive and store data and be read at a further distance than the passive RFIDs. The batteries can last only for a short while. But the current batteries in RFIDs can last for over 100 years because of their self-regenerating power. And what they are trying to do is marry the electromagnetic circuits and systems of the body to be coordinated and attached to a chip so that the body supplies the power to the chip. Just like when you move your hand, okay, just take your hand, raise it up, and move it down. All of that is done because of thought, because of electromagnetic thoughts that come down through the nerves. You want to move your fingers, you do that. Your brain sends a message to do that, whatever it is. Okay. Now, they want to marry the RFID chip to the human nervous system. And what it will do then, what they can do, as we read earlier, you give up your free will. That's why God is so against the mark of the beast. Okay. Then it talks about how that GE aircraft, they have 30,000 square feet. They can track everything in there with 5 readers. No, instantly, where everyone is and what's being done. Okay? Now, last paragraph, second sentence beginning with, for example. For example, digital angel. Remember, I gave the first sermon on that April 20th, 2002. They have been busy ever since doing things. And in that sermon, I said it's going to take time for them to develop it. They have been doing it. It's been 6 years since they've done it. 7 years now, getting close. Digital Angel has signed contracts with satellite providers to transmit their data for military personnel location beacons. These beacons use, and it gives the COSPAC StarSTAT satellite system. The system has some 400,000 digital beams around the world, and it is rising to some 900,000. By the year 2009, they plan to have a GL, stationary satellite that will enable them to find the location and details of every beacon. You may sometimes see these at night, the geostationary system scan tracks beacon. Skiers use them so they can be identified, and sailors as well. If they become lost at sea, they will be able to be tracked. Anything that has an RFID tag can be tracked by a reader or a computer. Think of that. Now try this on for size. Very last sentence in the second full paragraph on page 2. Hitachi came out with a chip that was even smaller. They call it RFID powder. They are just like the talcum powder you would put on a baby. So how about this? Robert comes in and robs a bank. He opens it up and poof, there's powder on him. But it's an RFID, and all they have to do is just, you know, have the tracker track him, and they know exactly where he's going, and bang, they got him. Now, the next paragraph. Solmark Innovations in January 10th, 2007 announced an invisible RFID. This can be applied to cattle, prime cuts of meat, military personnel, and can be read through hair. In other words, put on the scalp. Just print it. Isn't that amazing? All right, then they put RFID chips in clothing. In labels, talks about what they did at the Gap. It talks about MIT. Now, MIT has the responsibility of creating all of the different numbers for the different kinds of clothing and products. Did you know that the Gillette razor has an RFID tag built right into it? Now, let's see what they can do with these. What they are planning. And, of course, business is really happy to have these kind of things. It helps them. Okay? Now, let's go to page 3, top paragraph. It works with people who want to use this technology. One of many companies who sell the chips are Technic technique imitations. If you have a company and you go to one of these their presentations, they will give you books like this that will tell you what the chips look like, how they work, the types that are sold, and what the readers look like. They will help you install chips in your company. It's a very big business, and it's spreading very quickly. So you have total control over your factory. Everything and everyone. Next paragraph, second sentence. Soldiers can have active chips so they can be tracked via satellite wherever they might be in the battlefield. Now, I want you to think about this in relationship to the mark of the beast. All right, then they have another one here. Goods that are shipped from China. Every item in a box has an RFID number on it. Every carton has an RFID number on it. All it has to do is just pass through a scanner. They have these big scanners like this, and the trucks just drive these container cartons that are stacked on the ships or unloaded, put on trucks, and they go right through it. And instantly, like that, they know what is in there, and they check it with the waybill to see if it's exactly what the waybill says. And they know whether something has been moved out of place, taken. They know instantly. Amazing. Okay? Next paragraph. They are using chips to track inventory in order to be able to monitor what items are going where, if the right items are in the truck, etc. Passive chips are being put on devices to ensure they are valid. Now, they're going to do this with drugs because there's so many counterfeit drugs. So now they're going to put an RFID information on the drugs. All right, let's come down here to the next paragraph that begins with RFIDs are a great economic help to a company because they reduce theft and loss. Can't steal anything from the boss now. Put it in your purse and take it home, or put it, you know, because they'll see it's missing and all they have to do is track you. Come and search your home and there it is. That's why companies are interested, last sentence, because there are big economic benefits and efficiency. Now notice this, next paragraph. When you go to Walmart, Best Buy, the U.S. military, and many other agencies around the world, you will see they are all implementing RFID chips on items and increasingly on people. Because in 2002, I said it would become natural. Everyone will accept it. See, because you don't take these things and all of a sudden out of the blue say, everybody line up and get this chip. Now, what you do is you have it start invading the society. Everyone is using it. Everyone says, oh, this is wonderful. This is great. You know, we've stopped the losses of theft. We've stopped the losses of over inventory. You know, we know where everything is. We can keep track of the trucks. We can keep track of the truckers. We can keep track of the policemen. We can keep track of these things. And it really works good. And like I said this morning, they can take violent criminals, put the chip in them, and set it at a frequency, and they will sleep 22 hours a day. So it is to control behavior. Let's go on. Notice how it is growing. Next paragraph. The recent growth of the RFID industry has been staggering. From 1955 to 2005, cumulative sales of radio tags total $2.4 billion. In 2007 alone, 2.24 billion tags were sold worldwide, and analysts project that by 2017, cumulative sales will top $1 trillion, generating $25 billion in annual revenues for the industry. So here's what's going to happen. Beginning last paragraph. We are starting to see chips being implemented in credit cards, debit cards, passports, driver's license. What do you think national identification card is for? Okay. And many other things. Increasingly, they are being used to monitor people as well as items. RFID tags and embedded into clothes and personal belongings allow people to be tracked and monitored in shopping malls, libraries, museums, sports arenas, elevators, and restrooms. Big Brother is not only watching, Big Brother knows. American Express has them on their blue cards, and I just got my passport renewed, and I bet there's one there. They're announcing plans to place people tracking readers in stores to track customers' movements and observe their behavior. If you bought something with your credit or debit card, they will know what items you bought and if the items were chipped. They will know what you were buying. This way, they will be able to track you. So when you go into one of these malls, bang, you buy something or use your credit card or just have your credit card with you and it's got a chip on it. As soon as you walk in the door, you know these little things that stand alongside the doors? When you walk through, bang, it'll read it. They'll know whether you have a credit card, a debit card, how many you have, how much, and then they have that tied in so they can go to whatever it is, Citibank or Bank America. They know how much your balance is. They know what you can buy. They can track you where you're going. So say you go to Macy's. All right, the women go in the women's department, and they buy this, they buy that. They go down to men's department, buy something for their husbands or their sons. Then they go to the furniture department, and last of all, they stop by the jewelry counter on the way out, right? Yes. Isn't that where they have the jewelry counter? Glitter, glitter, glitter? Yes. Now I know why I don't like shopping in malls. Besides that, what else do they have? Surveillance cameras everywhere, right? Yes. All right, next paragraph. In 2006, IBM received a patent approval for an invention called Identification and Tracking of Persons Using RFID Tag System. You're dealing big time. See? One stated purpose was to collect information about people that could be used to monitor the movement of people through the store or other areas. Now, what if you have these reader, how should we say, towers throughout the city? Then they can track you going home. You remember the ad that came out years ago? This fellow went into the store and he piled everything into the cart. He put it into his coat. He had it coming out of his pocket, and he didn't go through the checkout stand. But when he went out the door, bing, everything was rung up and said, "Thank you, Mr. Jones, for all your purchases." They can do that. All right, let's go on. So here's what happens. Next paragraph. When someone enters a store, a reader scans all identifiable RFID tags carried on the person, whatever you have, and correlates the tag information with sales records to determine the individual's exact identity. A device known as Person Tracking Unit, which then assigns a tracking number to the shopper to monitor the movement of the person through the store. Then he says, next paragraph, if I had three readers in this room, I could scan everyone in 1 second and would know right away who's here. It could be done so quickly. It could scan that quickly, rather. The computers are getting quite sophisticated and capable of doing large numbers of scans at any given time. One company recently announced a computer that reads data transactions at 200 millionths of a second. That's 10,000 items. Think of that. Okay. What about University of Washington? They have it for tracking students. They can tell where they are. They said, "Oh, where's student so-and-so? Oh, he's on the fourth floor. Oh, now he just left the restroom and is going to class." No more hooky, kids. Right in London, top of page 6, they're doing it for the police. All 31,000 police in London. Third paragraph, page 6. In southern China, they're implementing RFID readers in the city of Shenzhen to track the movement of citizens. All citizens have an ID card with a chip so they can identify who is in what part of the city at any point of time. Amazing, isn't it? Correct. Comment was made, they can put this in front of every building, train station, airport station, hotel, motel, and keep track of everyone everywhere. Now, we'll talk about the economic crisis here in a little bit. But I just want you to grasp what's going on, and as Harry said, this is kid stuff.